necessary arrangements. His confidence level suddenly vaporized. This is a striking example of how quickly our behaviors ebb and flow depending on our mood, level of confidence, or thoughts. These nonverbals occur in real time and immediately transmit data. When we are confident, we spread out. When we are less confident, we withdraw. Arm behaviors in courtship. In courtship behavior, the man will often be the first to put his arm around his date, particularly when there is a chance that other males might try to encroach on his woman. Or he will plant an arm behind his date and pivot around her, so that no one can claim or violate this territory. Watching courtship rituals can be very enlightening and entertaining, particularly when you see males subconsciously staking out their territory and their date all at once. Another example of courtship behaviors of the arms involves how closely a couple will, or will not, place their arms next to one another when they are seated together at a table. There are large numbers of sensory receptors in our arms, so arm touching can generate sensuous pleasure. In fact, even brushing against the hairs on our bare arms or a touch through clothing can stimulate nerve endings. So when we place our arms near someone else's, the limbic brain is demonstrating overtly that we are so comfortable, physical contact is permissible. The flip side of this behavior is that we will remove our arms from the vicinity of our companion's arms when the relationship is changing for the worse, or when the individual with whom we are seated, whether a date or a stranger, is making us feel uncomfortable. Adornments and artifacts on the arms. Around the globe, wealth is often demonstrated through the wearing of precious items or adornments on the arms. In many parts of the Middle East, it is still common for women to wear their wealth in the form of gold rings or bands on their arms, indicating relative worth and status. Men, too, will wear expensive watches to demonstrate their socioeconomic status or level of wealth. In the 1980s, men in Miami were fanatical about wearing Rolex watches. They were the status symbol du jour and were ubiquitous among drug traffickers and nouveau riche alike. Other social emblems, including manifestations of one's personal or career history, can also be displayed in various ways on our arms. People who work in construction, athletes, and soldiers will sometimes reveal the scars of their profession. Uniforms may carry patches on the upper arms. Like the torso, the arms can be billboards to advertise aspects of our personality. Just look at the variety of tattoos people have emblazoned on their arms, or the muscles that bodybuilders proudly display with tight-fitting tank tops. To the skilled observer, a careful scrutiny of people's arms can sometimes reveal information about their lifestyles. The smooth, well-manicured elbows of the pampered differ greatly from those who are scarred or tanned from daily outdoor work. People who have been in the military or in prison may have artifacts of their experiences on their arms, including scars and tattoos. Individuals who espouse hatred toward a certain group or subject will often script or tattoo evidence of that hatred on their arms. Those who use intravenous drugs may have track lines along the veins of their arms. Troubled individuals with a psychological disorder known as borderline personality may have cuts and slashes where they have done intentional injury to their arms. With specific regard to tattoos, this style of body adornment has increased in the last 15 years, particularly in more modernized countries. However, this method of personal decoration has been used around the world for at least 13,000 years. As part of our body billboard, the message tattoos convey in current culture should be discussed. Concurrent with the relatively recent increase in tattooing, I was involved in surveying potential jurors, specifically with regard to how a witness or a defendant would be perceived if he had tattoos. The surveys, conducted multiple times with multiple groups of men and women, concluded that tattoos were perceived by jurors as being low-status, low-class adornments, and or vestiges of youthful indiscretion, which in general were not very well liked. I tell students that if they have tattoos, they should hide them, especially when applying for a job, and particularly if going to work in the food industry or the medical profession. Celebrities may be able to get away with tattoos, but even they have them masked when working. The bottom line on the subject of tattoos is that surveys show that most people don't like to see them. While that may change one day, for now, if you are trying to influence others in a positive way, you should conceal them. Arms as conduits of affection. Children need to be lovingly touched so that they can grow up feeling safe and nurtured. But even adults can use a good hug every once in a while. I give hugs freely because they transmit caring and affection so much more effectively than mere words. I feel sorry for those who are not huggers. They are missing so much in their lives. As powerful and effective as a hug can be in gaining favor and achieving interpersonal effectiveness with others, however, it can also be seen by some as an unwanted intrusion of their personal space. In the litigious age in which we live, where a well-meaning hug can be misconstrued as a sexual advance, one must be careful not to give out hugs where they are unwelcome. As always, careful observation and interpretation of people's behavior as you interact with them will be your best indicator as to whether a hug is appropriate or inappropriate in any given circumstance. Nevertheless, even without giving a hug, people can use their arms to demonstrate warmth and, in doing so, increase their chances of being viewed favorably by others. When approaching a stranger for the first time, try demonstrating warmth by leaving your arms relaxed, preferably with the ventral side exposed, and perhaps even with the palms of your hands clearly visible. This is a very powerful way of sending the message, "Hello, I mean no harm," to the other person's limbic system. It is a great way of putting the other person at ease and facilitating any interaction that follows. In Latin America, an abrazo, a brief hug, is part of the culture among males. It is a way of saying, "I like you." In performing an abrazo, the chests come together, and the arms engulf the back of the other person. Unfortunately, I know a lot of people who are reluctant to do this, and or feel very awkward when they do. I have seen American businessmen in Latin America who will either refuse to give an abrazo, or when they do it, appear as though they're dancing with their grandmother. My advice is to do it and get it right, since little courtesies mean a lot in any culture. Learning a proper abrazo is no different than learning to shake hands correctly and feeling comfortable doing it. If you are a businessman and will be working in Latin America, you will be perceived as cold or aloof if you fail to learn this familiar greeting. There's no need for that, when a simple gesture can engender so much goodwill and make you simpatico. Don't get bugged if you get hugged. Years ago at an espionage trial in Tampa, Florida, the defense attorney put me on the stand and, wishing to embarrass or discredit me, asked somewhat sarcastically, "Mr. Navarro, isn't it true that you used to hug my client, the defendant, every time you met with him?" I then replied, "It wasn't a hug, counselor. It was an abrazo, and there is a difference." I paused dramatically for a second, and then continued, "It was also an opportunity for me to see if your client was armed, since he once robbed a bank." The startled defense attorney ended the provocative line of inquiry then and there, since he was not aware that his client had previously committed a bank robbery with a gun. Interestingly, this abrazo story made the papers, as though the people of Tampa and nearby Ybor City, settled by Latinos, had never heard of an abrazo. Since this trial, the attorney in question and I have become close friends, and he is now a federal judge. After nearly 20 years, we still laugh about the abrazo incident. Some concluding remarks about nonverbals of the arms. Our arms can transmit a lot of information in decoding the intentions and sentiments of others. From my perspective, One of the best ways to establish rapport with someone is to touch that person on the arm, somewhere between the elbow and the shoulder. Of course, it is always wise to assess the person's personal and cultural preferences before you proceed. Generally, however, the brief touch I have just described is usually a good and safe place to initiate human contact and to let others know you are getting along. In the Mediterranean, South American, and Arab worlds, touching is an important component of communication and social harmony. Don't be shocked, startled, or threatened as you travel if people touch you on the arm, assuming they do so appropriately, as I have described. It's their powerful way of saying, "We are okay." In fact, since human touch is so intimately involved in communication, when there is no touching between people, you should be concerned and wonder why. 6. Getting a grip. Nonverbals of the hands and fingers. Among all species, our human hands are unique, not only in what they can accomplish, but also in how they communicate. Human hands can paint the Sistine Chapel, pluck a guitar, maneuver surgical instruments, chisel a David, forge steel, and write poetry. They can grasp, scratch, poke, punch, feel, sense, evaluate, hold, and mold the world around us. Our hands are extremely expressive. They can sign for the deaf, help tell a story, or reveal our innermost thoughts. No other species has appendages with such a remarkable range of capabilities. Because our hands can execute very delicate movements, they can reflect very subtle nuances within the brain. An understanding of hand behavior is crucial to decoding nonverbal behaviors. For there is practically nothing your hands do that is not directed, either consciously or subconsciously, by your brain. Despite the acquisition of spoken language over millions of years of human evolution, our brains are still hardwired to engage our hands in accurately communicating our emotions, thoughts, and sentiments. Therefore, whether people are speaking or not, hand gestures merit our attention as a rich source of nonverbal behavior to help us understand the thoughts and feelings of others. How appearance and nonverbals of the hands affect interpersonal perception. Not only do others' hands communicate important information to us, but our own hand movements influence how others perceive us. Therefore, the way we use our hands, as well as what we learn from the hand behaviors of others, contribute to our overall interpersonal effectiveness. Let's start by examining how our hand actions affect what others think of us. Effective hand movements enhance our credibility and persuasiveness. The human brain is programmed to sense the slightest hand and finger movement. In fact, our brains give a disproportionate amount of attention to the wrists, palms, fingers, and hands as compared to the rest of the body. From an evolutionary standpoint, this makes sense. As our species adopted an upright posture and our human brain grew ever larger, our hands became more skilled, more expressive, and also more dangerous. We have a survival need to assess each other's hands quickly to see what they are saying, or if they portend ill, as in holding a weapon. Because our brains have a natural bias to focus on the hands, successful entertainers, magicians, and great speakers have capitalized on this phenomenon to make their presentations more exciting or to distract us. People respond positively to effective hand movements. If you wish to enhance your effectiveness as a persuasive speaker, at home, at work, even with friends, attempt to become more expressive in your use of hand movements. For some individuals, effective hand communication comes naturally. It is a gift that takes no real thought or education. For others, however, it takes concentrated effort and training. Whether you naturally speak with your hands or not, recognize that we communicate our ideas more effectively when we employ our hands. Keeping success well in hand. Most successful speakers use very powerful hand gestures. Unfortunately, one of the best examples I can offer of an individual who developed his hand gestures to improve his communication skills is that of Adolf Hitler, a mere private in the First World War, a painter of greeting cards, and slight of stature. Hitler had no pre-qualifications or stage presence that would normally be associated with a gifted, credible orator. On his own, Hitler began to practice speaking in front of mirrors. Later, he filmed himself while practicing hand gestures to better hone a dramatic style of speaking. The rest is history. An evil human being was able to rise to prominence as leader of the Third Reich through his use of rhetorical skills. Some of the movies of Hitler practicing his hand gestures still exist in the archives. They attest to his development as a speaker, who capitalized on using his hands to enthrall and control his audience. Hiding your hands creates a negative impression. Keep them visible. People may regard you with suspicion if they can't see your hands while you are talking. Therefore, always be sure to keep your hands visible during face-to-face communication with others. If you've ever talked to someone whose hands are underneath a table, I think you will quickly sense how uncomfortable the conversation feels. When we interact in person with other individuals, we expect to see their hands, because the brain depends on them as an integral part of the communication process. When the hands are out of sight or less expressive, it detracts from the perceived quality and honesty of the information being transmitted. An underhanded experiment. Years ago, I conducted an informal study in three of my classes. I asked students to interview each other, instructing half of the class to keep their hands under their desks during the conversation, while the other half was told to leave their hands visible. After a 15-minute interview, we discovered that the people with their hands under the desk were generally perceived as being uncomfortable, withdrawn, holding back, sneaky, or even deceptive by those with whom they were speaking. Those interviewers with their hands in plain view on top of the desk were perceived as being more open and friendly, and none was perceived as deceptive. Not a very scientific experiment, but quite instructive. When conducting jury surveys, one thing that stands out is how much jurors dislike it when attorneys hide behind the lectern. Jurors want to see the attorney's hands so they can gauge the presentation more accurately. Jurors also don't like it when witnesses hide their hands. They perceive this negatively, commenting that the witness must be holding back, or perhaps even lying. While these behaviors have nothing to do with deception per se, the perception of the jurors is significant, reminding us that concealment of the hands should be avoided. The power of a handshake. A handshake is usually the first and possibly only physical contact we have with another person. How we do it, including its strength and how long it is maintained, can affect how we are perceived by the person we are greeting. We can all remember someone who shook our hand and left us feeling uncomfortable about them or about the situation. Don't dismiss the power of a handshake to leave an impression. It is very significant. Around the world, it is common to use the hands to greet others, although culture dictates variations on how hand greetings are performed, for how long, and how strong. When I first moved to Utah to attend Brigham Young University, I was introduced to what fellow BYU students called the Mormon handshake. This is a very strong and lengthy handshake used extensively, not only by the university students, but also by members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormons. Over the years that I was there, I noticed how foreign students, in particular, were often taken aback by this rather overzealous handshake, because in many cultures, especially in Latin America, the handshake is mild, some preferring to give an abrazo, as previously mentioned. Since handshaking is usually the first time that two people actually touch, it can be a defining moment in their relationship. In addition to being used to meet and greet, certain people use it to establish dominance. In the 1980s, much was written about how you could use the handshake to establish control and dominance by maneuvering the hand this way and that way, making sure yours was always on top. What a waste of energy. I don't recommend hand jousting to create dominance, as our intention should be to leave positive impressions when we meet others, not negative ones. If you feel the need to establish dominance, the hands are not the right way to do so. There are other, more powerful tactics, including violation of space and eye gaze behavior, that are more subtle. I have shaken hands with people who tried to establish dominance through this greeting, and I have always come away with negative feelings. They didn't succeed in making me feel inferior, just uncomfortable. There are also those who insist on touching the inside, ventral side of your wrist with their index finger when they shake hands. If it is done to you and you feel uncomfortable, don't feel surprised, because most people react that way. Similarly, you will typically feel uncomfortable if someone gives you what is referred to as a politician's handshake, in which the other party covers the top of the handshake with his left hand. I suppose politicians think they are being friendlier with this two-handed gesture, not realizing that many people don't like being touched that way. I know people, mostly men, who insist on shaking hands this way, and end up creating negative feelings in the people they meet. Obviously, you should avoid giving any of these discomforting handshakes, unless you want to alienate someone. As foreign as it may seem to Westerners, in many cultures, men engage in hand-holding behavior. This is very common in the Muslim world, as well as in Asia, especially in Vietnam and Laos. Men in the United States often are uncomfortable holding hands with each other because this is not common to our culture beyond childhood, or perhaps in certain religious rituals. When I teach at the FBI Academy, I ask the young agents to stand and shake hands with each other. They don't have a problem doing so, even when asked to engage in a prolonged handshake. However, when I ask them to hold hands together side by side, sneers and objections quickly arise. They cringe at the thought, and only do so with much hesitation. Then I remind the new agents that we deal with people from many cultures, and these individuals often show their comfort level with us by holding our hands. It is something we, as Americans, need to learn to accept, especially when dealing with human assets, informants, from other countries. When customs and intelligence gathering go hand in hand. When I was assigned to the Manhattan office of the FBI, I worked with an informant, asset, who had defected from Bulgaria. He was an older gentleman, and as time went on, we became friends. I remember being at his home one afternoon, having tea, which he favored late in the day. We sat on the couch, and as he told me stories of his work and life behind the Iron Curtain, he took my left hand and just held it for practically a half hour. As he spoke of his life under Soviet oppression, I could tell this encounter was more about therapy than it was about work. It was clear that this gentleman took great delight and derived much comfort from holding the hand of another person. This behavior was a sign of his trust in me as we spoke. It was much more than a routine FBI debriefing of a former intelligence officer. My acceptance of his hand was highly conducive to his coming forth with additional and vital information. I always wonder how much less information I would have received if I had moved my hand, because I feared touching or holding another man's hand. Many cultures use touch to cement positive sentiments between men, something that is not widespread in the United States. The story of the Bulgarian gentleman not only reveals cultural differences, but also illustrates the importance of physical contact for our species. In interpersonal relationships, whether between men, women, parents, and children, or lovers, it is critical to have physical contact and to assess it to determine how the relationship stands. One of the signs that a relationship has soured or is compromised is a sudden decrease in the amount of touching, assuming it existed. In any relationship, when there is trust, there is more tactile activity. If you currently travel abroad or plan to in the future, Make sure you understand the cultural conventions of the country that you are visiting, particularly with regard to greetings. If someone gives you a weak handshake, don't grimace. If anyone takes your arm, don't wince. If you are in the Middle East and a person wants to hold your hand, hold it. If you are a man visiting Russia, don't be surprised when your male host kisses your cheek rather than shakes your hand. All of these greetings are as natural a way to express genuine sentiments as an American handshake. I am honored when an Arab or Asian man offers to take my hand, because I know it's a sign of high respect and trust. Accepting these cultural differences is the first step to better understanding and embracing diversity. Avoid using hand gestures that offend others. In many countries throughout the world, finger pointing is viewed as one of the most offensive gestures a person can display. Studies show that people don't like it when someone points a finger at them, as shown in Figure 46. In schools, as well as prison yards, finger pointing is often the precursor to many fights. When talking with their children, parents should be careful to avoid pointing at them while saying things like, "I know you did it." The finger pointing is so distasteful that it may actually divert the child's attention from what is being said as they process the hostile message of the gesture. I don't get your point. Research with focus groups has shown that a prosecuting attorney needs to be very careful when pointing at the defendant with the index finger during opening statements. Jurors don't like to see such behavior because, in their view, the prosecutor has not earned the right to point until he or she has proven the case. It is far better to gesture with an open hand, palm up, at the defendant than with a finger. Once the case is proven, the prosecutor can then point at the defendant with the index finger during closing arguments. This may seem trivial. However, dozens of surveys with mock jurors have shown they are sticklers on this point. So I simply tell attorneys not to engage in finger-pointing in the courtroom. As for the rest of us, we should not point fingers when dealing with our spouses or children, nor with our colleagues at work. Pointing is just plain offensive. Finger-pointing is just one of many offensive gestures a person can make with a hand or fingers. Obviously, some are so well-known, they need no further comment, such as the bird. Snapping your fingers at someone is also considered rude. You should never attempt to get someone's attention with the same gesture you may use to call your dog. In the Michael Jackson trial in 2005, the jurors did not appreciate the mother of one of the victims snapping her fingers at the jury. This had a very negative effect. For those of you interested in further readings on hand gestures around the world, I would highly recommend Body Talk, The Meaning of Human Gestures, by Desmond Morris, and Gestures, The Do's and Taboos of Body Language Around the World, by Roger E. Axtell. These two wonderful books will open your eyes to the diversity of gestures around the world, and the eloquence of the hands in expressing human emotions. Be cautious when using preening behaviors involving the hands. We use our fingers to preen our clothing, hair, and body when we are concerned with how we look. During courtship, humans engage in increased amounts of preening, not only with regard to our own appearance, but we also groom our mates. Intimacy permits the lover to gently remove a spot of lint from her male counterpart's sleeve, even as he may gently dab a spot of food from the corner of her mouth. These behaviors are also seen between mother and child, not only in humans, but also in other mammals and in birds, and are indicative of caring and close intimacy. When observed within a relationship, the amount of grooming between the partners is a good barometer of their rapport and the level of intimacy permitted. Preening, however, can also create negative perceptions. For example, it is rude and disrespectful for one person to preen herself in a self-attentive, dismissive way when she is supposed to be listening to someone else. This is demonstrated in Figure 47 of the PDF. In addition, There are some acts of grooming that are seen as more socially acceptable in public than others. It is fine to pick a piece of lint off your sweater on the bus, but clipping your fingernails in public is another matter. Further, what is socially acceptable preening in one setting or culture may not be seen as such in another. It is also inappropriate for a person to preen another individual when they have not reached the level of intimacy to warrant that behavior. The physical appearance of your hands. By looking at people's hands, it is sometimes possible to assess the kind of work they do or activities in which they engage. The hands of individuals who perform manual labor will have a certain rough, calloused appearance. Scars may indicate working on a farm or athletic wounds received on the playing field. Standing with hands at the side with fingers curled may indicate prior military experience. A guitar player may have calluses on the tips of the fingers on one hand. Hands also indicate how much we care for ourselves and how we view social convention. Hands may be tended to, or they may be filthy. Nails may be manicured or look ratty. Long nails on men are seen as odd or effeminate, and people typically interpret nail biting as a sign of nervousness or insecurity, as seen in Figure 48. Because our brains focus so much on the hands, you should pay extra attention to hand hygiene, since others will. Learn how to manage sweaty hands. No one really enjoys shaking a hand that is moist. So I advise people who develop sweaty hands when meeting others, particularly important people like potential employers, future in-laws, or individuals in a position to grant favors, to dry off their hands before they attempt a handshake. Hand sweating not only occurs when we are excessively warm, it also happens when we are nervous or under stress. When you make contact with someone who has sweaty hands, you can assume he or she is under stress, since limbic arousal causes sweating. Use this opportunity to win some interpersonal points by unobtrusively doing what you can to help the person calm down. Putting people at ease when they are stressed is one of the best ways to ensure more honest, effective, and successful interactions. There are people who erroneously believe that if you have sweaty palms, you must be lying. This is simply not accurate. The same part of the nervous system that is activated during the limbic freeze, flight or fight response, the sympathetic nervous system, also governs our sweat glands. Since something as simple as meeting someone new can cause sweaty hands, this phenomenon must not be construed as indicative of deception. Approximately 5% of the population sweats profusely, and chronic perspiration makes the palms uncomfortably sweaty, a condition known as hyperhidrosis. Sweaty palms are not indicative of deception. They are only indicative of stress, or in some cases, a genetic disorder. Be careful when evaluating the reasons for moist hands. Although some sources state that a person is lying if his palms are sweaty, this is simply not true. Reading nonverbals of the hands. Up to this point, we have been examining how our hand behaviors and appearance can influence the way others perceive us. Now let's examine some nonverbals of the hands that will help us read what other people are thinking and feeling. I'll start with a few general comments about how our hands reveal information, and then turn to some specific hand behaviors of high and low confidence that can be useful in understanding the people we encounter. Nervousness in the hands sends an important message. The muscles that control our hands and fingers are designed for precise and fine movements. When the limbic brain is aroused, and we are stressed and nervous, surges of neurotransmitters and hormones, such as adrenaline, epinephrine, cause uncontrollable quivering of the hands. Our hands will also shake when we hear, see, or think of something that has negative consequences. Any objects held in the hands may appear to magnify this trembling, telegraphing a message that says, "I am under stress." This shaking behavior is particularly noticeable when a person is holding an elongated object, such as a pencil or a cigarette, or something relatively large but lightweight, like a piece of paper. The object will begin to shake or quiver immediately following the statement or event that created the stressful circumstances. Where there's jittery smoke, there's fire. During my work on a major espionage investigation, I was interviewing a man of interest in the case. As I watched him, he lit a cigarette and began smoking. I had no real clues with regard to his possible connection to the case. There were no witnesses to the crime, no significant leads, and only vague ideas of who might be involved. During the interview, I brought up many names of people who were of interest to the FBI and the Army in this matter. Whenever I mentioned the name of one particular individual named Conrad, the man's cigarette shook in his hand like the needle on a polygraph machine. To see if this was a random event or something more significant, I mentioned additional names to test his reactions. There were none. Yet on four separate occasions, when I mentioned Conrad, the subject's cigarette repeatedly shook. For me, that was enough to verify there was more to the relationship between the interviewee and Conrad than we knew. The shaking of the cigarette was a limbic reaction to a threat. It was also an indication to me that this individual felt somehow endangered by the revelation of that name. Therefore, he likely either had knowledge of something nefarious or was directly involved in the crime. During that initial interview with the subject, I did not know whether or not he was actually involved in the crime because, frankly, I did not know enough about the case. The only thing that spurred us to pursue the investigation and additional interviews was the fact that he had reacted to one name with the shaky hand response. Perhaps but for that one behavior, he would have escaped justice. In the end, after many voluntary interviews over a year, he admitted his involvement with Conrad in espionage activities and eventually gave a full confession of his crimes. Positive emotions can also cause our hands to shake, whether we're holding a winning lottery ticket or a winning hand in poker. When we are genuinely excited, our hands will quiver, sometimes uncontrollably. These are limbic-driven reactions. At an airport, as parents, spouses, and other family members excitedly wait for their returning soldier or relative, their hands will often shake in excitement. They may restrain their hands by grabbing and holding someone else's hand, or by tucking their hands in their underarms, or clasping them and holding them at chest level. Old videos of the Beatles' first visit to America are replete with young girls clasping their hands to combat the shaking that accompanied their extreme excitement. Obviously, you must first determine whether shaky hands are due to fear or joy by putting the behavior in context, examining the circumstances in which it occurred. If the shaky hands are accompanied by pacifying actions, like touching the neck or pressing the lips together, I'd be more likely to suspect that the shaking was related to stress, something negative, rather than something positive. It should be noted that trembling hands are only relevant as a nonverbal communication when they represent a change from someone's normal hand movements. If a person's hands always shake because, for example, he is a heavy coffee drinker or is drug or alcohol addicted, the tremor, while informative, becomes part of that individual's baseline in terms of nonverbal behavior. Likewise, in people with certain neurological disorders, that is, Parkinson's disease, hand tremor may not indicate their emotional state. In fact, if such a person suddenly ceases to tremble for a moment, it may indicate a deliberate attempt to focus more deeply on the particular subject just mentioned. Remember, it is change in behavior that is most significant. As a general guideline, any shaking behavior that starts or stops suddenly, or is somehow markedly different from baseline behavior, deserves further scrutiny. Considering the context in which the shaking occurs, when it occurs, and any other tells that might support a specific interpretation will improve your ability to read a person correctly. Hand displays of high confidence. A high confidence display reflects a high degree of brain comfort and self-assurance. Several confidence demonstrations associated with the hands alert us that the person feels good about and comfortable with his current state of affairs. Steepling. Hand steepling may well be the most powerful high confidence tell, shown in Figure 49. It involves touching the spread fingertips of both hands in a similar gesture to praying hands, but the fingers are not interlocked and the palms may not be touching. It is called steepling because the hands look like the pointed top of a church steeple. In the United States, women tend to steeple low, perhaps at the waist, which sometimes makes the behavior more difficult to observe. Men tend to steeple higher, at chest level, which makes their steepling more visible and powerful. Steepling signifies that you are confident of your thoughts or position. It lets others know precisely how you feel about something and how dedicated you are to your point of view. High-status people, lawyers, judges, medical doctors, often use steepling as part of their daily behavioral repertoire because of their confidence in themselves and their status. All of us have steepled at one time or another, but we do so to varying degrees and using a variety of styles. Some do it all the time. Some rarely do it. Others perform modified steeples, such as with only the extended index finger and thumb touching each other while remaining fingers are interlaced. Some steeple under the table. Others do it high in front of them. Some even steeple above their heads. In people who are unaware of the powerful nonverbal meaning of steepling, the response can persist for significant periods of time, particularly if circumstances stay positive for them. Even when people are aware that steepling is a tell, they still have difficulty concealing it. In these individuals, the limbic brain has made it such an automatic response that steepling displays are difficult to overcome, because particularly when an individual is excited, he or she forgets to monitor and control the reaction. Circumstances can change quickly and alter our reactions to things and people. When this happens, we can transition from a high-confidence steepling display to a low-confidence hand gesture in milliseconds. When our confidence is shaken or doubt has entered our minds, our steepled fingers may interlace as a prayer, as demonstrated in Figure 50. These changes in nonverbal behavior happen quickly and very accurately reflect and define our real-time internal reactions to changing events. A person can go from steepling, high confidence, to fingers interlaced, low confidence, and back to steepling, high confidence, reflecting the ebb and flow of assurance and doubt. You too can harness proper steepling and hand placement for positive impact. Steepling can be such a powerful purveyor of confidence and self-assurance that it is hard to challenge a person displaying such a nonverbal signal. Steepling is a very useful behavior to adopt. Speakers and salespeople should use it often for emphasis, as should anyone trying to convey an important point. Consider the confidence of your hand gestures when you are being interviewed by a prospective employer, presenting material at a meeting, or simply discussing issues with your friends. Far too often during professional meetings, I see women steepling under the table or very low, undermining the confidence they genuinely possess. I hope that as they recognize the power of the steeple as an indicator of self-assurance, competence, and confidence, traits most individuals would want to be recognized as possessing, more women will embrace this gesture and display it above the table. When it comes to steepling, the jury isn't out. The power of nonverbal behavior can be documented by studying the impact of steepling in various social settings. Steepling is useful, for example, when testifying in court. Its use is advocated when training expert witnesses. Witnesses should steeple to emphasize a point or to indicate their high confidence in what they are saying. In doing so, their testimony will be perceived more powerfully by the jury than if they were merely to place their hands on their laps or interlace their fingers. Interestingly, when a prosecutor steeples, as his witness testifies, the value of the testimony is enhanced because the attorney is perceived as being confident of the witness's statements. When jurors see witnesses who interlace their fingers or wring their hands, they tend to associate such behavior with nervousness, or too often, unfortunately, with deception. It is important to note that both honest and dishonest individuals display these behaviors, and they should not be automatically associated with lying. It is recommended that when testifying, individuals should either steeple or cup their hands together without interlacing their fingers, as these are gestures that are perceived as being more authoritative, more confident, and more genuine. Thumb displays. It is interesting how verbal language sometimes mirrors nonverbal language. When movie critics give a film two thumbs up, it indicates their confidence in its quality. Thumbs up is almost always a nonverbal sign of high confidence. Interestingly, it is also associated with high status. Look at photographs of John F. Kennedy, and notice how often he carried his hands in his coat pocket, thumbs sticking out, as shown in Figure 51. His brother Bobby did the same thing. Lawyers, college professors, and doctors are often seen grasping their lapels simultaneously with their thumbs up in the air. There is a national chain of fashion portrait studios that invariably has females photographed with at least one hand clutching their collar with a thumb in the air. Apparently, the marketing team at this company also recognizes that thumbs up is a high confidence or high status display. High confidence, high status thumb displays. When individuals carry their thumbs high, it is a sign that they think highly of themselves and or are confident in their thoughts or present circumstances. Look at figures 52 and 53 of the PDF for examples. Thumbs up is another example of a gravity-defying gesture, a type of nonverbal behavior normally associated with comfort and high confidence. Normally, the interlacing of the fingers is a low-confidence gesture, except when the thumbs are extended straight up. It has been noted that people who use thumb displays generally tend to be more aware of their environment, more acute in their thinking, and sharper in their observations. Observe those individuals who manifest thumbs-up behavior and notice how they fit this profile. Normally, people don't posture with their thumbs up, so when they do, you can be relatively certain that this is a significant behavior indicative of positive feelings. Low confidence, low status thumb displays. Feelings of low confidence can be evidenced when a person, usually a male, puts his thumbs in his pocket and lets the fingers hang out on the side, as shown in Figure 54. Particularly in an employment setting, this signal says, "I am very unsure of myself." People who are leaders or who are otherwise in control don't manifest this behavior when they are working or performing. A high-status individual who is casually relaxing may exhibit this behavior briefly, but never while he is on. This is nearly always a low-confidence or low-status display. Thumb displays are so accurate that they can help you effectively assess who is feeling good about himself and who is struggling. I have seen men make a potent presentation punctuated by steepling. But when a listener revealed an error in the speech, the thumbs went into their pockets. These types of thumb displays are reminiscent of a child standing in front of a disappointed mother. This behavior conveys that someone has transitioned from high confidence to low confidence very quickly. Thumb thing is wrong here. While I was staying at a world-renowned hotel in Bogota, Colombia, the general manager commented to me that he had recently hired some new hotel guards, and although he couldn't put his finger on it, there was something about them he didn't like. He knew that I had worked in law enforcement for the FBI, and he asked whether I noticed anything bothersome about his new staff members. We walked outside where the guards were posted and took a quick glance. The manager noted that although they had new uniforms and their boots were shined, something wasn't right. I agreed that the uniforms looked professional, but pointed out that the guards were standing with their thumbs in their pockets, making them look weak and incompetent. At first, the manager didn't seem to grasp what I was saying, until I had him demonstrate the posture himself. Immediately he said, "You are right. They look like little kids waiting for their mother to tell them what to do." The next day, the guards were shown how to stand and look authoritative, hands behind back, chin up, without looking menacing to the guests. Sometimes little things mean a lot. In this case, the disappearing thumbs became powerful purveyors of low confidence. Not exactly what you want from a security force, especially in Bogota, Colombia. Try this experiment on your own. Stand with your thumbs in your pockets and ask people what they think of you. Their comments will confirm the unflattering and weak attitude this posture projects. You will never see a presidential candidate or a leader of a country with his thumbs in his pockets. This behavior is not seen in confident individuals. For an example of this behavior, look at Figure 55 on the PDF. Genital framing. Men sometimes, subconsciously, will hook their thumbs inside their waistbands on either side of the zipper and either pull up their pants or even let their thumbs hang there as their dangling fingers frame their genitals, as shown in Figure 56. Genital framing is a powerful dominance display. In essence, it is saying, "Check me out. I am a virile male." Not long after starting to write this book, I discussed this nonverbal behavior when teaching a class at the FBI in Quantico, Virginia. The students scoffed, saying that no man, especially subconsciously, would be that blatant about his sexuality. The very next day, one of the students came back and told the class that he had observed a student in the bathroom who stood in front of the mirror, preened himself, put on his sunglasses, and just for a moment did some genital framing before he proudly exited the bathroom. I am sure that the guy wasn't even thinking about what he was doing, but in fact, genital framing occurs more often than we think, and not only in country western videos. Remember the Fonz in the TV series Happy Days? Hand displays of low confidence or stress. Low confidence displays are the flip side of their high confidence counterparts. They reflect brain discomfort, insecurity, and self-doubt. Low confidence displays should alert us that the individual is experiencing negative emotions that may be caused by being in an uncomfortable situation or by thoughts that induce self-doubt or limited confidence. Frozen hands. Research tells us liars tend to gesture less, touch less, and move their arms and legs less than honest people. This is consistent with limbic reactions. In the face of a threat, in this case, having a lie detected, we move less or freeze so as not to attract attention. This behavior is often quite observable during conversation because a person's arms become very restrained while telling a lie and otherwise are animated when telling the truth. Because such changes are controlled by the limbic system rather than the thinking brain, they are more reliable and useful than spoken words. They indicate what is really going on in the mind of the individual who is speaking. So look for hand and arm movements that are suddenly restrained. They say a lot about what is going on in that person's brain. A less than moving experience. The tendency for liars to be less animated in their gestures was a major reason I didn't believe a young woman who had told local sheriff's deputies that her 6-month-old son had been kidnapped in a parking lot of a Walmart in Tampa, Florida. As the woman told her story, I observed her from a monitoring room. After witnessing her behavior, I told the investigators that I didn't believe the totality of her story. Her demeanor was too subdued. When people tell the truth, they make every effort to ensure that you understand them. They gesticulate with their arms and face, and are emphatically expressive. Not so with this suspect. The retelling of a horrific kidnapping story by a loving and distraught mother would have been accompanied by more demonstrative, ardent behaviors. Their absence was alerting to us. Eventually, the woman confessed that she had actually killed her child by stuffing him in a plastic garbage bag. The kidnapping story was a total fabrication. The freeze response of her limbic system that restrained her movements betrayed the lie. Hand-wringing. When people wring their hands or interlace their fingers, particularly in response to a significant comment, event, or change in their environment, it is normally indicative of stress or low confidence. Look again at Figure 50 on the PDF for an example. This common pacifier, seen in people around the world, actually makes it look like they are engaged in prayer, and perhaps subconsciously or otherwise, they are. As the intensity of the hand-wringing increases, the color of the fingers may change as areas blanch due to blood being forced away from the tension points. Matters clearly are getting worse as this behavior manifests. Interlaced stroking or rubbing of the hands. A person who is in doubt, a lesser degree of lowered confidence, or under low stress, will only slightly rub the palms of his hands together, as in Figure 57. However, if the situation becomes more stressful, or if his confidence level continues to fall, watch how suddenly gentle finger-to-palm stroking transitions to more dramatic rubbing of interlaced fingers, demonstrated in Figure 58. The interlacing of fingers is a very accurate indicator of high distress that I have seen in the most acute of interviews, both in the FBI and in people testifying before Congress. As soon as an extremely delicate subject comes up, the fingers straighten and intertwine, as the hands begin to rub up and down. I speculate that the increased tactile contact between the hands provides the brain with more pacifying messages. Neck touching. I am discussing neck touching in this chapter on hand behaviors because if you keep an eye on the hands, they eventually take you to the neck. People who touch their necks anywhere while speaking are, in fact, reflecting lower than normal confidence or are relieving stress. The covering of the neck area, throat, and or the suprasternal notch during times of stress is a universal and strong indicator that the brain is actively processing something that is threatening, objectionable, unsettling, questionable, or emotional. It has nothing to do with deception, although deceptive people may demonstrate such behavior if they are troubled. So again, keep your eyes on the hands, and as feelings of discomfort and distress surface in people, their hands will rise to the occasion and cover or touch their neck. I can't tell you how many thousands of times I have seen this behavior, yet most people are unaware of its significance. Just recently, I was chatting with a friend outside a conference room when a female associate walked out with one hand over her neck dimple and the other holding a cell phone. My friend continued to converse as if nothing were wrong. When the woman on the cell phone ended her call, I said, "We'd better go check on her. Something's not right." Sure enough, one of her kids had come down with a high fever at school and needed to go home as soon as possible. Neck touching is one of those behaviors that is so reliable and accurate that it truly merits our close attention. Up to her neck in lies. Sometimes not covering the neck can be a telltale clue that something is amiss. I once assisted a local law enforcement agency with a case involving an alleged rape. The woman who reported this assault had reported 3 separate rapes in a 5-year period, a statistically unlikely history. As I watched her videotaped interview, I noticed that while she spoke of how frightened she was and how terrible she felt. She was extremely passive and never once covered her suprasternal notch as she told the story. I found her lack of behavior